Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Saturday, October the 16th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, what is decency? Decency, what is it to you? I mean, I know that sounds like a fairly straightforward question, maybe elementary one, but what do you think decency is? Is it a buzzword of the privileged? Or is it something more than that? That particular exploration is coming up right after this. Welcome back. Dear listener, thank you for your ear on this Saturday, and I hope that this Saturday finds you well. I hope it finds you in good spirits. I hope it finds you doing the things you want to do, like to do, and that you are healthy and in safe hands. I hope that you and yours are. And look, on yesterday's episode, I talked about Sir David Amess, the MP in England in the House of Commons, who had been murdered just so savagely in his own surgery as he was serving the people, and serving them in a church, no less. And that horrific evil act, which, by the way, I must say, has now been termed by the Metropolitan Police as an act of terrorism, which is something that was very, very carefully disclosed, because it was not something that the media had speculated in or on over the last 24 hours or so. And I made a point to mention that in the episode yesterday, because normally what you do get from the media, in my view, is a lot of this kind of tipping the hand and speculating on things when there really is no foundation to be jumping to any kinds of conclusions. But the media in this instance, and to their credit, I must say, stayed well away from making judgments about the nature of the murder, whether it was some kind of terrorist attack, whether it was right-wing terror or terror from anywhere else. I mean, I think that it's important that people resist that. I know people love to, and we all do, jump to conclusions in many instances. And I just want to say that the media, I think, showed some really good restraint there. And as it happened, it was actually turned out very late on Friday night, just last night, that the Metropolitan Police in the UK, the Metropolitan Police, no stranger themselves to lots of problems within its ranks, as we know very well, most recently with the murderer who was sentenced to a life term, indefinite life term, of course, murderer of Sarah Everard. We know that the Metropolitan Police are certainly a police department with a lot of problems indeed. And the Met Police, it was they who late last night pronounced this murder of David Amess, the MP of Southend-on-Sea, of Southend West specifically, as an act of terror. So the 25-year-old that they have arrested is going to be held for questioning, and under the terrorism, counter-terrorism act in the UK, I think what happens is you have 14 days to question someone who is suspected of a terrorist act. And so there's a lot more latitude now to try to find out what happened and why it happened. And so we will see over the next few days and weeks how these things begin to unfold with the 25-year-old. There's not been any information released on that particular person, and we will, I'm sure, soon start to see some of it as the days and weeks go on. But, you know, and I'm sure that when next week arrives, there'll be more tributes, lots of tributes to Sir David Amos. So I wanted to start with that. And I want to go on really now to the main topic here, which is something that I should spend a lot longer on than I'm going to, but I because I do talk about it here and there, is the term and the concept of decency. This murder, obviously, well, no murder is decent, right? There's no act of murder that is a so-called decent act. And to call it indecent really doesn't even begin to paint the picture. But what we have in our society, wherever our society might be, whatever that means to you, is a thorough breakdown of any kind of moral code whatsoever. I do think that people are inherently good. I do believe that when push comes to shove, goodness comes out of people rather than so-called badness or not goodness or evil. I really do think so. I think that in ordinary conditions and in everyday life, when push comes to shove, the goodness in people comes out. And so that's where I think that comes from, the inherent decency and goodness in people, the inherent human nature to want to do a good thing, particularly when tough and bad things happen. We saw this, I mean, one of the easiest examples and the quickest one to my mind is a very simple example, is September 11th, 2001, where in New York City, people were really nice to each other. I remember I was in New York at the time. People were very nice to each other in the days and weeks after what happened in that terrorist attack. It was very, very evident. People were out going out of their way to say hello to you and to be nice to you, have gentler conversations with you, complete strangers. There was a really loving aspect to that in New York, and people were decent toward each other in a hard scrabble city where people are wise, cynical, jaded, and also very tough and demanding, but also people who would have your back in a heartbeat and have a strong sense of what is right and what is wrong. And in that moment, 20 years ago, people were just extraordinarily nice and decent to people, to each other, with great respect for each other, which, again, you don't get every day in New York or anywhere. I mean, certainly not across the U.S. And, I mean, there are cities and towns and hamlets all across this United States that you do see people treating each other with respect and kindness and politeness. I mean, there are lots of areas in the south of the country where people are much nicer than they are here in San Francisco, California. Dear listener, I can attest to this. I've spent time in the South, traveled in the South, and in the few times that I was there, I met people and encountered people who were very decent, who were very polite, very hospitable, and very kind. And then I've spent, well, a lot of time here in San Francisco, and, you know, there are times where you get some, like anywhere and at any moment, where you get some very rude, nasty, and quite selfish human beings. And very indecent human beings. So these things are always in flux. It's not always the way I've described it by any stretch. There's some very good people here in San Francisco as well. And people who actually, I think, on the main, are good. But you've got, at least in this part of San Francisco, you've got some very selfish and self-centered people. And it's not good because San Francisco years ago did not have a lot of the set that you see now, which is the gentrification set, the people who come in here and think that they own the place and don't care about the customs, the mores, or anything. You can't come into a new place and think that you own it. That's that colonialist mentality. That you think you own the place. You so-called discovered something that was already here long before you got here. And that attitude permeates in this city and in others, particularly within the gentrification set, who think that they can bring all of their garbage and indecency to places where you have to first respect what's already here. And I find that in a lot of gentrified places around the world, in my view, that there are a subset of people who do not care about the cultures and the customs and the mores of the society, of the place in which they are moving into. And so they just obliterate it. You don't come into a new neighborhood and move in and start bleh, throwing yourself and throwing your weight around and being arrogant and not having consideration and care over your neighbors and about your neighbors specifically. You don't do that. But there's so many people, and Spike Lee talked about this years ago. He talked about Fort Greene in Brooklyn, where, you know, people would all of a sudden start complaining about people in the neighborhood. And these are people who just got there, and they're complaining about people in the neighborhood who have been around for a long time. Then you've got all this other stuff going on. And it's just a fundamental lack of respect and a lack of decency for the culture and for the people in the neighborhood who've been living there for generations. You just got here 5 minutes ago, and you are being the most rude and obnoxious and indecent person that there possibly can be. And so that's the challenge. What is decency? That certainly is not decency. And in the wake of this murder of Sir David Amess, in the wake of murders on a daily basis throughout this whole globe, across the globe and around the globe, in the wake of what governments do that are at best indecent, what is decency? And is decency a buzzword for convenience? Is it a buzzword of the privileged in a society in which there is nothing really decent for those who are constantly discriminated against, who don't have equal pay, who are routinely shafted by the criminal injustice system, for those who do not have health care? How far does that definition expand, decency? What does it really mean? And this is not semantical hour. It's not an hour of semantics. It really is, by yours truly, an attempt to try to probe that question and explore perhaps where those avenues of answers lead to. Dear listener, welcome back and thank you for being here with me on this particular day, Saturday, October the 16th, 2021. And I am still, I'm very sad about what happened to the MP yesterday, you know? And I think one of the reasons that I really do feel very sad about this, I felt the same way about Jo Cox as well, when she was murdered so brutally and heinously 5.5 years ago, almost now. It's the shockingness of this, the callousness, and how vulnerable we are as human beings, and then people who are public servants, how vulnerable they are as they do their business, do their job. I felt that same way about Jo Cox. I felt that way about the president of Haiti who was assassinated a few months ago, back in July of this year, 2021. And I feel this way now, especially now with Sir David Amess. And the reason I say especially is because I know that Jo Cox was a decent person. I don't know a lot about President Javal, except that there were people in Haiti who did not like him for various reasons, and there were things that he was doing that weren't necessarily to the liking of the people. But as I say, and I say now, it doesn't mean that he should be assassinated. You don't go from not liking someone's views or not liking somebody's policies or not liking the way they did something to wanting to kill them, to killing them. I mean, that's just absolutely off the charts mental. Forgive me for the use of the word, but I'm using it. Well, I'm not going to make excuses. That's just off the charts crazy to me. And Sir David Amess was a decent person. All of these tributes that have been pouring in over the last 24 hours more than rubber stamp that view and that proposition. People from all sides of the political lens, if you will, from all areas of it, have universally praised him as a decent, kind human being who always had a kind word to say. And even if his views were different from yours, he always respected you. Wow, imagine a world like that. And there are other people like a Sir David Amos who is still with us, of course, dear listener. I dare say you're one of them. What I am saying is that we need decency, and obviously Sir David Amos was a decent person. Now, as I've said before, I don't agree with a whole lot of what he stood for. He was for reinstating the death penalty. And he is also pro-life. How about that? He believed in anti-abortion, which meant he believed in a woman's right not to choose. You have no choice. You've got to bring this child to term. That's where his politics and his views are, or were. He believed in Brexit. He was an ardent Brexiteer. Brexit has destroyed the United Kingdom. He was a Thatcherite, someone who was avowedly of the camp of Margaret Thatcher. And you know what Margaret Thatcher was to the United Kingdom and to England in particular. Absolutely horrific. But he did stand for children, and he did stand for safeguarding animals. No problem with either of those. You won't see me stand up against either of those. And he did stand for dealing with and finding a cure for endometriosis. And he cared about women in that way too, and in other ways. There's a great level of compassion to him too. Even as he campaigned for some of the things that I find to be quite abhorrent, the death penalty, to reinstate that, no thanks. No thanks. To tell a woman they don't have a right to choose, although I just said, well, he has compassion to women in that way. Well, not when it comes to autonomy, he wasn't. But you see, those things don't get talked about in the tributes. They just get skirted over. And they focus on the decency. And so I think one of the reasons why I continue to be affected by Sir David Amos, as I was affected by the murder of the Haitian president, Javal, earlier this year, and as I was affected 5 years or so ago, 5+ years ago, by the murder of MP Joe Cox of Batley and Spen in West Yorkshire in England, is because David Amos was a really decent human being, despite his views about issues and his policies and issues. And I would take someone being decent and kind and compassionate and caring about his constituents or her constituents or their constituents far more than someone who seemingly shares the same party affiliation that I may vote with. I'll take that any day of the week and a month on Sundays. I really would. Because decency is about your scope of humanity and how kind a person you are, how you conduct yourself in your affairs. How do you measure someone's attitude and how they are day to day with other human beings? And for me, that means that someone like a Sir David Amos, despite some of the views he has, is someone that I absolutely could have a conversation with and have some debate with. He worked for his constituents. There are people who don't do a darn thing for their constituents, who you never hear about doing anything for their constituents. They just make the phone calls for some money from donors every year or two, especially if you're here in the United States House of Representatives. And that's all they do. You never see them do any constituent meetings. You never see them do any of that. Sir David Amos died doing that. He was murdered doing that. He was a decent person who cared. And even though I definitely disagree with his views, one thing that will go a long way with me is if someone does the work of the people, even if they have views that are different from mine. And so one of the reasons I feel for the family of David Amos, of course I do. I mean, on any human level, you would, hopefully. I don't want to see someone murdered. I don't care who they are. As they say, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And I mean it. It's not just a cliche. I feel for that family. I really do. And it's just a shame that this happened. It's horrifying. It really is. You're at your place of work and someone savagely murders you. It's horrible. And I think that's where I am, dear listener. And I think with a heavy heart, I am trying to have this dialogue with you today about decency. About decency. We don't have a department of decency in government. There is not one of those that exists. There is not a house called decency. Even in the house that supposedly resembles decency, an MP, was murdered in a church. And we know that in the church, in fact, in the very faith that Sir David Amos assiduously subscribed to, we know there are some indecent people. The Catholic Church, the priests. And I don't want to get into religion, as thorny as that subject is. I don't want to do that. I don't think that's really the focus of my inquiry. I'm just using templates to further the conversation here about decency. Don't have it in all these institutions. I think it's tremendously lacking. And so decency also involves a larger discussion as well. The building blocks start with us. There is no manual called decency. There is no decency for dummies that you will see in your local independent bookstore. You can't go to your local independent bookstore and find Cliff Notes for Dummies. That, dear listener, does not exist. You can't take a walk down your local high street and see a shop called the Decency Shop. There is no manual called the Decency Manual. There's no museum called the Museum of Decency. Decency is about what you're taught and the values you have. Have you been shown decency in your life? Were you raised with decency from your parents, from your guardian, from your mentor, from your teacher? Did they exhibit those qualities? Did they infuse you with the values? Because decency is also about the kind of values you have, the kind of approach you take to people. Are you a good listener? Decency is something that comes from the heart. It's a human quality. And you either have that human quality or you do not. So it starts on that micro level, that small but very core level. Does your heart have decency in it? Now, all human beings, I think, have, when push comes to shove, a part of their heart that is decent and has goodness in it. But along the way, perhaps, whether it's upbringing, experiences, whatever it might be, society reinforcing things, that decency may erode. Maybe that goodness has been hardened and glazed over by something that's very poisonous. Sometimes we have both of these feelings going on in our hearts at the same time. We have these wicked thoughts, these poisonous energies that we carry sometimes as human beings, and then we have these really good, healthy, positive, life-affirming things, sometimes at the same time, as I said. But decency is not a buzzword to me, but I wonder if there are some people who use that word as some kind of privileged catchphrase in a society where decency is lacking in the structure and the system that governs everything. For example, here in the United States, we don't have a decency in terms of the way we operate in government. We don't have health care for all. That's by its very nature at best indecent. We don't have a really good education system. We don't have even a decent one. By definition, that's indecent at best. A woman doesn't have a right to choose in this country in any meaningful way. That too is indecent at best. We don't have a proper validated right to vote in this country. That also, at the very least, is indecent. We do not have For the People Act passed. We don't have the John Lewis Voting Rights Act passed. We don't even have the infrastructure bill passed yet. These are things that help people. These are things that will allow people to exercise their franchise. Those are, in their absence, indecent things at best. So when you have a society that hasn't completely done away with the death penalty, a society that still has Guantanamo Bay open, a society that has high COVID rates in a number of states, where's the decency in that? Politicians who walk around saying, no, you don't have to wear a mask. We don't have any mask mandates out here. And I'm actually going to pass laws and executive orders, and I'm going to put them into place that say that there should not be any mandates by local governments in my state on wearing masks during a pandemic that has taken 700,000 lives in the United States and nearly 4.5 or 5 million globally. That's really indecent, don't you think? Telling and passing laws in states that say you cannot, in your local town as mayor, put on any mask mandate. Let them die. That is disgusting. But that's how some people feel. And if you don't have decency in a society, what do you have? That was Glenn Close asking Michael Douglas back in 1987, are you discreet? Well, I think the question here is, are you decent? Are you a decent person? Would you classify yourself as a decent person? That may sound like a really pathetic and silly question to ask you, dear listener. But having asked the question myself, I kind of am a little biased about whether I think it's a pathetic question or not. But are you a decent person? And what does decency mean? What does decent mean to you? I guess to answer that question, don't you not have to ask yourself, what does decent mean? And I guess that's the thrust of this whole episode today. Forgive me I don't know what you forgive me for. But no, I don't. I just think that this is important, I've thought about this question on and off, just in years and years, not every day obsessively, but I have thought about it over a number of years now, and usually it does come after horrific events like this, assassinations and murders and all these kinds of ungodly and evil, horrible things that happened, child cruelty, what happened at Sandy Hook here in the U.S. Years ago at that elementary school in Connecticut. Gabby Giffords being shot in the head. You know, we've had a long running history here in the United States of attempted assassinations and actual assassinations. And again, across the pond in my native country is the latest example of this violence. And all of that brought this touchstone up for me about decency, because David Amos was a decent person. I'm not even talking about his views, which I disagree with. I'm talking about him. everybody has characterized him as this very nice, kind, decent person. In the end, isn't that all we have? Our word? And the way we comport and conduct ourselves? I mean, isn't that all we have in the world? And I guess, again, I think I alluded to this, but I want to make it clear. You can't really uncouple what you do as a person from the society in which you're doing it in. You are a part of the society, even if you claim that you don't contribute to it. Maybe you don't pay taxes. Maybe you don't do this. Maybe you don't. You are part of the society. Even if you choose not to participate in it, you are still in the society. You're just choosing not to do something. But that doesn't mean you are not part of the society you live in. Of course you are. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You'd be on another planet, or you wouldn't be alive, or you wouldn't exist. Just imagine if that dialogue was reworded, as I said earlier, in the Fatal Attraction movie, which, by the way, you know, my goodness me, did that character Glenn Close played not get treated any decent way at all? I mean, the screenplay, that thing got many nominations for Oscar back in 1988, the year after it came out. And I actually was a fan of the movie at the time. But even as a fan of the movie, I knew the movie was terribly flawed, treated women like worse than dirt, and treated the Glenn Close character like a cardboard cutout of some male paranoiac fear and fantasy. Oh, this is the kind of woman I want, but this is the kind of woman I'm afraid of. Married man, right? This is the kind of thing, right? The married man perspective. This is the kind of woman I want, but this is the kind of woman I'm also deathly afraid of. You know, I want to cheat. I want to do this. I want to do that, but I want to be free from consequence. That's what Fatal Attraction taught us. Forgive me for going off topic for a second, dear listener, but that's what the movie Fatal Attraction taught you. Married men can do what they want, and the family that kills together stays together. While casting the woman, who is a single woman, who has decided that the career is the career she wants, and if she decides to have a child, she decides... Those two things shouldn't be divorced from each other. We do that too often in this culture. But this movie set that as some kind of binary choice. But that choice was rendered so demonizing to the Glenn Close character, made her seem like an absolute, complete terror. I mean, she portrayed it extremely well. I thought Glenn Close did a darn good job. Should have won the Oscar for that. But, however, maybe it would have sent the wrong message. I mean, Glenn Close championed that character off screen. She had written and spoken to the director of that movie, Adrian Lyne, and said, look, you know, this character should look like this, 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 and this. Should have a bit more meat on the bones, etc., etc. And, you know, she ultimately lost out. And the way the movie treated her, it was just absolutely ridiculous. But what if the movie rescripted the line I just played you from the movie, and it was instead Glenn Close asking Michael Douglas's character, are you? Am I what? Are you decent? As she looks seductively into his eyes. What if that were the question du jour? I mean, would that have turned the scales on a very indecent character played by Michael Douglas? I mean, Michael Douglas's character was a piece of you know what. I mean, seriously. I mean, but there are men like this. It's not like that character was overbaked. I mean, this is very... Listen to me. Anyone listening to me right now, dear listener, and you are among those, and thank you for listening, you know this well in your own personal experiences. You have come across men that have treated you like garbage. And they have hurt you. And they have hurt your feelings. And they have betrayed you. And you've come across men who have not done that, who have treated you like the very human being that you wish to be treated as. And then some. But I'll never forget that line from Fatal Attraction when she, Glenn Close's character, Alex Forrest is the name of the character, asks Dan Gallagher across the dinner table in a restaurant while the rain is pouring in New York City, "Are you? Am I what? Discreet?" I don't mean to make light of it, but I can't help myself. I've seen that movie so many times, even though I tell you how badly, and those of you I'm sure who are listening know about this film from 1987. I've seen it a billion times. Written essays on it, da-da-da-da-da-da, been there, done that. But that is a line, isn't it? Are you discreet? Are you decent? Are you a decent person? And what does decency mean to you? Because you can't uncouple that from the larger society. I don't think you can. I don't think you can. And there is indecency and violence in poverty, indecency in the healthcare system in the US, indecency in getting rid of universal credit in the UK, indecency in cutting back on services in the UK, and then saying, well, it's for austerity. While you and your rich fat cat friends, Boris Johnson, are getting away with armed heists and basically murdering the United Kingdom right before our eyes with this Brexit disaster has absolutely strangled the lifeblood out of people. That's very indecent. Someone who has been cavorting with a billion women and having children with about 800 of them. Okay, I'm being just a tad exaggerant. And then hitting his then fiancée who is shouting in her own flat, get off me at 1 a.m. Conservatives who put their hands around the necks of women who are protesting, not threatening anybody, they're protesting. And even if they were threatening somebody, you're going to grab them by the back of their neck and drag them out of Mansion House, as Mark Field did? Then he had to eventually skulk out the back door of politics with his tail between his legs, when he should have been charged with assault and should have been thrown out the party there and then. Decency. None there. Obviously. So where is decency for you? Have you stopped to think about that, dear listener? Decency. I don't think we have it. I think we've lost it. I think it's a human quality we either have or we don't. We were either raised with or we weren't. Either we acquire it somehow, I guess, through the example of mentors, teachers, parents, or we just don't give a rat's about it. Or sometimes it's both. I really worry about this because we have future generations that are going to succeed us. And if they look at our example now, they would be darn, darn scared and they would shudder at us. There are kids now that have more decency than the adults do in the room. There are people who are activists that care more about this world than some of us do. And we are leaving a crap hole for them. And that's indecent. Collectively, whether it's politicians doing it or us. I want to talk about this a bit more, but in very serious terms. And I'm going to issue a warning, and you'll understand why right after this. Welcome back. Dear listener, I wish to warn you now that the following audio you are about to hear is gravely disturbing and may cause triggering. I do want to repeat that, dear listener. The following audio you are about to hear is deeply disturbing and may cause triggering. At this point, listener discretion is advised, and if you do not want to listen to the following audio, I would suggest that you come back in about 3 minutes' time.
We now know new disturbing details about a reported rape on board of a SEPTA train on the Market Frankfurt line tonight. A suspect is in custody. But investigators say the incident may have been prevented or stopped sooner if people who were there would have spoken up. Action News reporter Dan Quay are live outside of the Upper Darby Police Station with the latest on the case. Dan.
Rick, from surveillance video on the train, police say there was no doubt this was a rape. Police say what surveillance video also shows is there were other people on the train who watched and did nothing to stop it. Instead, they were filming it and may have posted it on social media. At SEPTA 69th Street Terminal, there was shock among commuters that a woman had been raped on the train.
Just knowing that we have to ride the train every day, we have to be actually looking for stuff that like that to happen. You know, this is kind of scary.
It was Wednesday night, just after 10. A woman had boarded a westbound train on the L, headed for the 69th Street station. Police say a woman was sitting alone when a man she did not know, identified as 35-year-old Fiston Noy, sat next to her and tried to start a conversation, that the man tried to touch her sexually, and then that the victim tried several times to push him away. The suspect threw her down, ripped off her clothes, and began to sexually assault her for several minutes. A SEPTA employee then boards the train, sees what is happening, and calls police.
The call came in from a SEPTA employee, we're not exactly sure where, stating that something wasn't right on the L with the female.
The victim, who apparently went into shock, tells police the last thing she remembers is a SEPTA officer pulling Noy off of her. She was taken to a hospital for treatment. Noy was taken into custody. What is startling to police is that there were a number of other people on the train who witnessed the rape and did nothing to stop it. Instead, some of them filmed it and may have put it on social media.
There was a lot of people, in my opinion, that should have intervened. Somebody should have done something. It speaks to where we are in society. I mean, who would allow something like that to take place?
Commuters were also outraged to hear what others did while the rape was going on.
I mean, it's horrible because they were bystanders and, you know, it's the decay of society. It really is. There's no decorum. Anything goes.
Fiston Noy has been charged with rape, sexual assault, and numerous other charges. He is well known to police and is believed to be homeless. He's being held in lieu of 10% of $180,000.
What words do you have for that? A woman violently attacked. A woman raped. I mean, we are way out of control. We have become the very thing I think that we hate. In our fervor to claim ourselves to be holier than thou, you have a group of people on a train watching a woman being raped. And nobody, not one person, tries to intervene or tries to do something to prevent that rape from continuing. Even more disturbingly than that, people taking out their cell phones and taking video of this, recording it, and putting it on social media? We can't keep doing this. This society is not going to last. This is unspeakable. It's despicable. The rape is despicable and evil. These people who were sitting there watching it and doing nothing is despicable and evil. And the people who pulled out their cell phones and recorded this, they too are despicable and evil. And then uploading it to social media? I think every one of those people who sat there and watched someone violently attacked like this, all of them should be on trial, on charges. They should be prosecuted. Under bystander laws, there are some states in this country that do have bystander laws. I think they do in Massachusetts. I think they do in New York. Not sure. This happened in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area. It goes beyond saying that this is not decent. It goes beyond saying that this is an indecent thing. That's kind of sugarcoating it by calling it indecent. This is inhumane. It is cruelty of the most vicious order to take away a part of a woman, to kill that woman, in a sense, and to videotape that, video record that, and put it on social media like you've got some trophy you're displaying of someone's agony and someone's pain. You can't do this. Who the hell are we? I condemn violence against women. I condemn rape. I condemn it all. And I definitely also condemn people sitting there doing nothing, nothing at all. And those who pulled out their cell phones and recorded this, shame on you. Shame on the lot of you. You should all be put up on charges. So disgusting. And there are people like this. I just don't get it. I really don't. I really don't understand why people do what they do. And there is no justification for this. And this epitomizes, in my view, the whole lack, as you heard one of the women in that report say, lack of decency. And really what I think she said was, there is no morality or comportment anymore. There's a decay in the society. That's what she said. There is a decay in the society. And I said to you earlier, dear listener, that you cannot uncouple these two things. You cannot separate the individual from the society. I don't think you can. Because even if you try to act outside the society, you're still part of the society. And a society that condones this, a society that says a woman can't choose and does not have control over her body, is the same society that allows people in a train to sit back as vile, despicable human beings and watch a woman have no control over some evil human being who rapes her. How can she do anything about that? And why didn't somebody get rid of that guy and stop him? I get it. There was an employee of SEPTA, Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, who I think ended up, pulling this guy off of her. But why were people sitting there watching? Why didn't someone do anything? You know, I think back to the 1960s and Kitty Genovese. And to correct the record on that, as people have, Kitty Genovese did not have a million people watching her be raped and murdered. There were maybe two or three people who did. And one of them had called the police. The other two or three or four were just watching. You know, there are movies that come out, and forgive me for this horrible segue to movies. But here's what gets me, and this is the reason why I did this segue. However crude of a segue it is after talking about something as horrific as rape. And I hope you will bear with me for a moment, dear listener. There are movies out there, like the 1967 film, The Incident. I've written about that movie quite a bit. I've talked about it. It's a film that I think is a very important film. I think it's a very good film. It's an uncomfortable film. It depicts something not altogether unsimilar from what happened on this train just 3 days ago. That happened 3 days ago, what happened on that subway train in Philadelphia or in the Philadelphia area. That happened 3 days ago. And in the film The Incident, there is a carload of passengers on the subway train in New York City who are all sitting there watching these two thugs as they abuse people, as they get violent with people, as they assault people, as they attempt to violate women, and everybody's sitting there watching it. And those people are as monstrous, if not more monstrous, than the people who are doing all the terrorizing. Because they become even larger terrorizers. They represent the society. You cannot uncouple these things. And I speak so passionately about this because this is something that I've been so adamantly fighting against for such a long time. Forgive my self-indulgence here, because this is probably not appropriate. But I remember when I was in school, I argued, and even though I didn't, and I still don't believe in the death penalty, part of a moot court thing, I argued in mock trial. I argued for the death penalty to be given to rapists. And I'll never forget, I've told you this before on this podcast. The look from the female students as I argued this, I can't replicate it. They were horrified that I would argue this. But you take a woman's soul from her when you do this to her. And for that matter, a man, a boy, a girl. When you do this to them. And that movie, The Incident, is a carbon copy of what the society has become and has long been in the United States. This is the same society that sat back and watched black people get lynched, had parties, sold parts of their body, took photos of it, watched as black people got burnt at the stake. Thousands upon thousands of people, white people in a freaking town square in their Sunday bests with their kids. That's the kind of society that I'm talking about. Wicked and evil and not decent at all. Barbarians at the gate and beyond the gates. I didn't even get to January 6, 2021, and people smearing their crap from their backsides all over the walls of the United States Capitol building. People are just disgusting. And then you wonder why we are still wearing masks, some of us. And then you wonder why people are giving you the dirty, weird look when you have your mask on and gloves. We are turning into, or have been for many centuries, very, very disreputable creatures. Yes, there are many good people amongst us. But we've got to focus on reframing the values of a society and also reframing our own values. What are our values and what do we believe in? Do we truly believe in sitting back and watching a woman get raped and pulling out cell phone video cameras and recording it and putting it on social media? Oh, we believe in watching black people get stoned and burnt to death and lynched. We do, because that's what this country's been doing forever to us. George Floyd. Except in that case, there are people telling that cop to stop. Oh, he didn't. He didn't. And then you interview people who murdered Ahmaud Arbery and treat them like they're some friggin' celebrity. Like, what is this place? What is this place? I do wonder, dear listener, where we're going to be in 20 or 30 years, 50 years, 100 years. Where is the human condition going to be at? Where are our values going to be? And how are we going to define decency 50 years from now, 100 years from now, a millennium from now? How much of that is going to be connected to technology or automation or robots or social media or our iPhones? Or does that have anything to do with this? Is it about something deeper? Where are our values going to be? Where are they now? Where were they 100 years ago, 400 years ago, 500 years ago? Caging kids, Native Americans being genocided, black people being enslaved, Asians being interned in concentration camps here in California and beyond, here in San Francisco, dropping bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. How decent are we as human beings? And how decent are the governments and the societies in which we live? And people don't want to wear a mask. They would just as soon spread death. That's how indecent we are. And that indecency just scratches the surface. Where are we going? Who do we want to be? And who are we? Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.